We're getting right into it with Ramin Nazir, and we've been friends now for a while. We don't see each other enough. And I was just on his podcast not too long ago, a month ago or something.
Excellent episode.
The Rainbow Brain Skull Hour.
That's correct.
I love it. And now you're in this purple haze. We'll have to talk about Mr. Purple Haze in a minute.
Of course.
But you are the Renaissance man, is right?
Oh, thank you.
You do the most beautiful art, and of course we're doing stuff together and working on different things together, where you're providing some wonderful, wonderful graphics for us and art and podcaster,
oh yeah,
comedian,
oh,
game
yeah.
creator,
oh yeah,
musician, right? I mean, this is
criminal,
amazing.
Thief, thug. No, I'm trying to throw in some negative things. But yeah. I can't think of any. So
yeah, well, anybody
that's
looks
not
at
a good
your
sign,
face,
right?
Anybody looks at your face knows none of that's true. Sweetness personified. Yeah, I mean, you are relatively young for such a wonderful resume.
Oh, thank you. How old am I?
38.
Oh, man, 36. But I guess the beard adds a little bit more to it. But
went the wrong way. I thought I was going the right way. More than any of your accomplishments here, you know, what really is of the most interest to me as a human, for us to chat about stuff anyhow, is that open heart and mind of yours that is just allowing whatever to be and come through you, comes through your art and your podcasting and all of that, but it comes through just one-to-one. And so how did you get there? What happened? You grew up this side of the world, right?
Yeah, I grew up half in Texas, half in Canada. My parents are from Iran. I feel like a decade ago I would have said I'm Persian, but now it's like kind of, it's hip to be like more ethnic. Like before you'd kind of hide your ethnicity and try to blend in. And now it's like, oh yeah, Iran, you know, the third world of the oppressed axis of evil, like give me some oppression points. Yeah. Not really, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
When you asked me that question, I was, I'm like so tempted to just quote one of my favorite Ram Dass speeches. I wouldn't, because it'll take 10 minutes. But when he says, I was a professor at Harvard. I had a Cessna airplane, a Triumph motorcycle, a Mercedes Benz. I love that he says Mercedes. Mm-hmm. I had 12 research assistants, and I was living, from the outside, I had everything that you thought you could want. But then there was always that voice inside when I was alone in the bathtub that just knew that I didn't know. And mm-hmm. I was not that successful. I did not, me personally, have 12 research assistants. I do not even have a PhD or a master's or anything like that. I don't have a motorcycle. I don't have an airplane. I have a Toyota, and I'm still making payments on it. So I'm not at the point where Ram Dass was, where he was getting to that place of discomfort with just looking to the outside for what's going to make you feel good. But perhaps Ram Dass gave me that, he's one of those people that showed that once you get to the top, there's nothing there. So you better start figuring this out and stop pushing it like a credit card bill to, oh, I'll be happy when I get this and I'll be happy when I get that. So, feel like that was all about achievements.
Yeah. He kept saying, he sat in that bathtub and said, I'm a fake.
Yes.
You know, it's that little talker in the back there that is pretending to run the show. So
yeah. So I'm from like our mutual friend Duncan Trussell. I was also in the stand-up comedy world. That was like where I was spending most of my time. So you know, it's all about how do I get on TV again, and how do I get more followers, and how do I get a Wikipedia page, and it's all this just ego stuff. And part of you knows it's ego stuff, because at this point we've been brought up with all these movies saying the answer is inside and do the right thing. And, you know, you kind of hear that message, but it doesn't really hit you. So it takes different people to articulate it differently to actually hit you. But the hearing the Ram Dass story, and I mean, you know this better than everyone. Once you, if someone who doesn't know Ram Dass asks you, who's Ram Dass? Like, once you try to start explaining it, it's like, oh, geez, like, how do I even start? How do I put it in two sentences? Like, I don't want to just talk about the guru stuff. I don't want to just talk about the psychedelic stuff. I don't want to just talk about the aging stuff, the polishing the mirror, the on and on and on. And how do I articulate this in a way that does not bore people right away? So,
wait, now, but back up. What was the first thing that, I mean, you took a psychedelic, or somebody popped you on the head and said, hey, take a look at this book? I mean, what was that first thing?
I'm trying to find out if there was a big leap. I don't think there ever was a huge leap. I think it all came in little increments. I would say psychedelics did help, but also I was, much like Terrence McKenna, I was a psychedelic thinker before psychedelics. I feel like I was always drawn to things with a certain iridescence, and I loved cartoons and wild colors, and I loved art more than I loved finance and structuring things. And I feel like I was much more right-brained in that way. Like, I've had to kind of grow the left brain and figure that stuff out so that the right brain can exist. And I don't even know if it's just left brain, right brain. That's just one metaphor of looking at it. But I would say that, sure, psychedelics gives me like a little bit of an incremental push. Music, of course, does. Hearing people like Ram Dass speak, Terrence McKenna speak, all that. And just kind of getting older too, with each year where you figure out life doesn't go the way you want. Not that I've had the most traumatic childhood or anything. I'm probably in the upper, the upper tier of not having tons of trauma. When you look at the whole world, really? I probably have the very privileged upbringing of it. I mean, just the fact that I do what I do, it's not easy to, because we've all seen really talented artists on street corners and doing street performance, and they can't even make $5 in a day. But you look at them, they're like, they're so talented. Why does this person not have any money? So it's not just the art that gets you there. Like, you have so many other things you need to go. So in that sense, I'm very lucky that I even get to do this and find a way to make a living on it. But man, I don't know if I can give a good answer as the one thing. So right. Many.
Right. Just a lot of streams. Just.
Yeah. I will say DMT is a big one. Mushrooms is a big one. Yeah. LSD I found was more of a fun one than it was a big, internal realizations ones, but it's different for everybody. Hmm. So, it's a big mix of things. And that's even the way my life is now. If someone asks me, what do I do? Like, I don't have one income stream that's the biggest one. It's like all these little income streams that keep me alive. So maybe that's something. Maybe that means something.
There you go. Yes, absolutely. And it just expresses itself everywhere in terms of what you're doing, the way you are, how you approach so many different traditions that you're interested in and talk about on the podcast. And so you is doing your dharma is kind of the way I think it is, no?
Oh, I hope so. Yeah, I'm working on it. So much of it is just what I show to the outside. Like, if you ask my girlfriend and it's like, oh, is he peaceful? And she doesn't think that, probably. And I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, when you can show the perfect part of yourself to online, and then meanwhile the 99% of you that yells at traffic and at the internet, and when you lose a video game or something, it's funny that we don't really see that.
Yeah. I just went through that this morning with technology and having to call. You know what it's like calling someone in India? And you know, I mean, I'm completely familiar. I once asked, what is your name? John Smith. I know that's not your name. Your name is probably Krishna or something.
Yeah.
And then you use a tone, worse with this person because they don't seem to understand, or you don't understand them. And it just escalates yeah. into a really bad Larry David bummer.
That's funny. I'm not kidding you. I had to call FedEx today to come pick something up, and I had to do the whole tech support thing. And I was also talking to India, and it was like a bad connection, and like their English wasn't that good. I mean, their English is of course better than my Hindi or whatever it is. I'm assuming they spoke, but and all that was even just internal. It wasn't like, oh, come on, why can't you speak English or tell me your real name? It wasn't like even close to ever saying that, but inside you're feeling it. It's like, oh man, now I have to navigate this communication puzzle, and they're not understanding me, I'm not understanding them. But then again, it's in this moment that we're frustrated with whatever tech support person. It's like we hang up that phone and they're talking to another one of us. They talk to 100 or 200 of us a day, so that's a tough hand there too.
Yeah, right. Yes, it certainly is. By the way, my dog is having a bad dream or a nice dream. I don't know what. Who knows? But you hear that?
A vocal dream. Something where their voice must be home.
Yeah, yeah. But the other thing about the unfortunate circumstances of dealing with tech issues and dealing with support that happens from the other side of the world is you notice that, I mean, I notice my tone, and it starts to get even shorter and shorter. And then it's like, all right, listen, I am not, and you go there, righteous, the whole thing. And then suddenly you see this whole passing show that you're creating. And then the next thing is, holy shit, I'm still breaking out and wanting to choke someone to death. Really?
I know we've talked about this before, and it kind of reminds me that I have this habit of asking you the wrong question, because I'll ask you like, what would Maharaji think about blah, blah, blah? Or what do you think he was thinking when he was experiencing his, and then it's always like, it was nothing like that. That wouldn't have even crossed his mind even slightly, but I still play this game of, if I'm frustrated, I'm like, oh, is Maharaji messing with me right now? Did he just put on that disguise really quick to like snap me back into it, like a bell that reminds you to focus on your breath again?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Regardless of whether that's what's really going on.
But you know what? That is what's going on every day, every moment for everybody. The Maharaji, we're talking about Neem Karoli Baba, Ram Dass's guru, my guru. That is a very hard thing to describe. Yes, it was a man in a body, and he acted out in all sorts of different ways. But it was, you could see it wasn't coming from the mind at all. It was just a happening. But that thing, which once it's beyond duality, which this particular body was, this body, whatever that thing was in that blanket, there's tons of that everywhere. They may be called, from your guardian angel, you could call it. But whatever it is, it just reminds me. I'm sorry to go on here.
Oh, no. I like it.
It just reminds me that once you have some trust in that, I call it that thing there. Because
that thing there,
that thing, no, T-I-N-G, that thing there, because,
oh, okay.
And I tell this story a billion times, but I grew up in Montreal, and I grew up with French Canadians, and they spoke English, but they had an expression when they couldn't express what they were talking about very well because didn't have enough English or whatever, they'd go, well, that thing there. So that's another name of the divine presence for me, that thing there. Yeah, and so there's a lot of that things there.
The Quebecois accent.
Yes, that thing there. Tabarnak. Oh, God, I'm going to get killed for that. swearing in French. But the thing is,
one of the best languages to swear in, I think. I mean, who else we got? True. Like Italian also, but like French are kind of up there with the good swears.
Yes, they are. Anyhow, I just want to say, everybody's got that thing. Everyone's got that thing there. And you can relate. So doing what you just suggested, which is I see phenomenon coming, things happen, I get aware of something. That is a direct, wonderful message, moment to moment. If you can be open to it, you can see it. You can see it coming from a million miles. Thank you, that thing there, for waking me up. And that's all it is. Like, we're working to get our smartphone app better, because we have people coming to us going, you know what? I could use a little something at 3 o'clock. I want a push notification where Ram Dass goes, be here now. Be here now. And you stop. I said, okay, we're working on it.
Oh, but that's a good one. And especially because
that's what we're talking about.
And that's old Ram Dass too. Like, when you hear the inflection of it, it's like because he's slowed down over the years, of course, like, for not even just because of the stroke, but he embodies a different level of presence when he had less ability to say things quickly, because he was, you know, the master of the one liner, the two liner, the 10 liner, etc. And I watched a VR thing with Ram Dass recently, and I thought that was very cool. You're in the garden with him, and he's just there.
How did you watch that? Oh, you went to Gary O's site?
I don't know if it was on his site. It was on some video player on my Oculus Quest, and it showed up under the...
Wow. I guess he's put it up there. Yeah, it's something we haven't really... He did this fantastic. His name is Gary Yost, and he went to Maui, and he did this thing with Ram Dass in the garden a couple of years maybe before Ram Dass left, and put this wonderful 20-minute piece together. And actually, I haven't seen the final thing. Gary, if you're listening, my Oculus broke.
No.
Help. Another support call I can't make. Okay.
Did it just stop working, or
did
you hit it?
Stop working. It won't go online. It's just like, okay. But anyhow, this is a beautiful meditative portrait, really, of Ram Dass, just being very present in his what they called Hanuman Garden. And
yes,
wow,
I think
you're the only
Hanuman
person I know who's
too.
Ever. Yeah, right. You're the only person I know who's ever seen this. You.
Oh, that's cool. That makes me feel more special, because then it feels like I was actually there across from him, instead of just being one of thousands that
thousands.
Has that. I was the one person that got to go there.
Yeah,
and it's I don't know how much you've gotten to spend in VR, but it really does trick the brain into thinking you're there. And you think of it as, oh, it'll just be a bigger screen. But no, when it's everything being fed into you, even if it's only 180 degrees radius, it's still very immersive. We've got a ways to go also, but it's still pretty cool.
Yeah. No, it's still, the resolution is still, but yeah, it's coming. Somebody who loves you and our staff, who has Ganesh Dass.
Oh, Ganesh Dass.
Yes. He gave me some notes, and because he was like, when are you doing this podcast with Ramin? I said,
directly in the eye.
Oh, I just saw something like that. Oh, my God. Where someone was informed in a creative situation. It was maybe a TV show. Do not look at any of these actors in the eye, the stars. Right? Are you sick?
Ellen?
No, I don't know. I don't remember who it was. I don't know if it was that. Anyhow, but he says, I love this. He's a writer, so he's even writing me some notes. It's really cool. Due to his high podcast diet. Are you on a high podcast diet?
High podcast diet?
Yeah.
I consume a lot of podcasts, or that I consume a lot of things and then listen to podcasts?
Probably both, maybe. I don't know.
due to his high podcast diet.
Yes.
Okay.
He is super open to lots of different kinds of spirituality, but he does not subscribe to any specific one. If you try and nail him down, forget about it. That's not going to happen. And it goes on from there. Buddhism and bhakti and magic and science and psychedelics, futurism, imagination, manifestation. Tell us about that. diet.
About all the podcasts, diet. So,
and the manifestation through your own spiritual path.
It reminds me of...
You have 4 minutes to bring up it all.
Oh, excellent. That's way more time than I wanted. I thought this was 30 seconds. And I just like do... I just insult the other debater the whole time or something. But... So I was watching, we talked about Frank Zappa, of course, last time we spoke, we talked about Coltrane, Miles, Bird, Dizzy, all those people. I know that those are a different category than Zappa, but still, I guess that era, 60s, 70s. But I was watching.
Can I just say one thing, though, before you go?
Sure.
Okay. This is not normal for someone at 36 years of age. I mean, it's not, I guess, totally abnormal, but this man is just sending in all of these vibrations of these different people who were like they saved my life. So this is Coltrane saved my life. Miles, that whole scene saved my life. So he says it lightly, but I can't find a lot of people like you.
Oh, Ramin. Interesting. Last time I did a podcast that was also live streamed, people were, or one person in particular commented that I was like one of her dad's friends. And I took it as a compliment. I'm like, oh, is it because I'm bringing up Coltrane? Is it because I'm bringing up Rush? Is it because I'm bringing up, and I name all these other people. And apparently, because I don't know Chance the Rapper and Megan Thee Stallion and Cardi B and stuff. Not that I have anything against those things. It's just, it doesn't do anything for me. Maybe it will later. Maybe I need to be 30 years later and then I can listen to that stuff. Oh, but to answer the Ganesh question, and then I trailed off into Zappa, it's because I had a specific quote that I had to write down that was so memorable to me, where Gail, his wife, now passed away, was describing you know, his roots, because they're talking about Italy and Sicily, and she said that now to Frank Zappa would never think of what does it mean to have an Italian grandfather that immigrated from Sicily and where does that make me fit in, blah, 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 blah. Like none of that is interesting to him. What is interesting to him is how do I come about an education by virtue of contrast material? And as soon as I heard that sentence, I was like, oh, damn, how do I come about an education by virtue of contrast material? And I realized that's what I already kind of gravitate towards. I can't just listen to one school of thought and then be happy with it. I have to go out and look like, what's this person saying? What's this person saying? And to the point where I would be afraid to show people the lists of podcasts that I listen to. I'm thinking of doing a little segment on it, but just that I have, some people might look at this and be like, wait, you listen to Scott Adams? Why is Ben Shapiro on here? Why do you have Adam Carolla on here? Why do you have Positive Head Podcast? Why do you have all these like random ones that seem to not be able to coexist with each other? I have to tune in to people, even if they're like politically or ideologically have nothing to do with what I like to believe. Like I have to hear what they're saying so I can build the whole picture. And even though I can't really conclude what that whole picture is yet, I have to always have that feeling of expanding, even within schools of thought, like, cause there's Theravada Buddhism and Mahayana Buddhism. And one says the goal is to end suffering. And then the other one says, you were trying to end what? How are you trying to get out of here? Like, cause once you end the suffering, you're just kind of right back where you were. So little things like that, little things that kind of build out wholeness. So, and I still found a way to include a Zappa quote with that. I'll try to do that to all the answers. I have to include some.
Oh yeah, some yes.
Dead musician quotes. And maybe I'm here to turn on the next generation. I have to find a way to find more friends
it. You are. It's contrast quotes. That would be good too. Look, you can see this in your artwork, aside from obviously what's going on with the podcast and all. And yeah, you are on a mission from God.
God.
To pull all these strings into one. You know what they say in the Ramayana, though? And this is a little bit out of context, actually, because it says, like, there's a string of all the attachments from mother, father, work, sister, brother, husband, children, every attachment. You take all of those strings and you put them into a ball. and lay it at the feet of Sri Ram. So there's a way in which, you know, you're doing that when you said, hey, maybe I got, you know, some kind of offering here for next gen. And yeah.
Absolutely. And it all just condenses into a ball.
It eventually, we would, I wouldn't say hope, but we assume that that's what I have seen it with my own eyes. Yeah, it condenses into a ball that becomes nothing that you can touch, taste, feel, blah, blah, and or say a word about.
I take away from that is that it's like the word condense for sure, because you're imagining it getting smaller. And oftentimes when something is getting smaller, it might just be that you are moving away from it and it appears to be getting smaller. So in condensing it all into one, it's kind of like you're zooming out of all the drama of your life, the drama of your city, your country, your earth, your galaxy and everything, until just, I'm the awareness, huh? Not the thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's just all part of the path, the practice. The condense probably isn't the right word, but taking all of these, every string from every part of your life, and basically, if it isn't an attachment, it's probably something that has already risen to a great degree to another dimension. But if you take all the attachments and then tie them to the feet of the one, and you can actually do that and let go, of course, then you'll be with... I just heard Alan Watts talking about Zen. Zen, it's that thing that all artists and higher mind... they describe in a way without saying anything about what it is, because there's no idea what it is. And that thing that's left unsaid, I'm paraphrasing, that thing that's left unsaid, which can never be said, is Zen.
Yes.
One of his cute talks. Yeah,
Alan. I like that. I need to, it's been a minute, because I've said before, like I go through phases where I'm all about McKenna, all about Ram Dass, all about... just, you know, you listen to someone for months and months, and then you kind of, you've heard all you can, and your brain does that thing where you, it doesn't hit the same. But with Alan Watts, it's been at least a year or so since I've really dove back into writings and talks. Actually, much more the talks than the writings, because, you know, he has that just really charming affect. Yeah, and yeah. I can't do it well, which doesn't even matter at all.
Yeah. He's so great. What was I going to say?
Live from New York. It's mind rolling. Live.
Oh, boy. So I just, there. Oh, I know. You were talking about different people that, and Alan Watts is somebody, you know, it's been a while and so on, and all the different people that you listen to or read, I guess. Okay, what about, and this is just private between me and you, what about Joseph Goldstein?
Oh, I don't know Joseph Goldstein.
Okay, I got you. I knew I'd get you at some point where you didn't know somebody.
Is that a real one?
It's real. This is so real.
I was trying to see if you were tricking me, where it's, you know, you ask someone, what have you seen this movie? And they say yes. And you're like, aha, there is no such movie. Testing you or something. But no, I don't know Joseph Goldstein.
Oh,
and I haven't even heard the name Joseph Goldstein.
Okay. So, you've heard Jack Kornfield?
Of course I've heard Jack Kornfield.
Okay. Yeah. Sharon Salzberg?
Of course, Sharon Salzberg has a new book out, doesn't she?
Yeah, Real Change, everybody. The greatest book for us to read during this very, very, very weird times that we're in.
I'd love to talk
world.
To her, too. Somehow missed my target for some reason I haven't gotten her on yet, but I need to have her on.
I'm writing this down because absolutely I'm going to ask her to get on your show, because that would be fantastic for your audience. Okay, Sharon on Ramin. Joseph is the third in the, there's like the three, just think of, remember the three amigos? So the three amigos were
he's the third tenor that no one remembers the name.
The three tenors, yeah.
I'm thinking of Placido Domingo, Pavarotti, and the other guy.
Yeah,
there's like a. Have you seen that? It's
okay. Now, of course,
like
I forget.
A Canadian sketch.
Can I forget? No, he's not Canadian. The third guy.
I think it's Royal Canadian Air Force or something.
Air Force.
No, not that he is Canadian. I'm saying, have you seen the Royal Canadian Air Force? Where?
No. What? What's that?
Oh. It's a show back in Canada.
Royal Canadian Air Force. My father flew for the Royal Canadian Air Force.
Air Force. Cool.
In the Second World War. He was a bomber pilot.
The Canadian military is pretty giant, but I can't help but have the self-deprecating Canadian of like, yeah, one of 12 that flew in the...
Yes, right. One of those, what do they call them? Oh, God. Anyhow.
Can I just clarify one thing really quick?
Yeah,
That when I mentioned Royal Canadian Air Force, I don't even remember much of it. I don't remember if it was a good show. I remember it as something my parents would watch, but I brought it up because there was a sketch about Pavarotti, Placido Domingo, and the other guy. And in the sketch, his name is literally the other guy. And he's like signing things as other guy and stuff. And they made a whole thing about that. Great. So that's why I just had to tie the circle of Joseph Goldstein being the other guy. But who knows? Maybe Jack Kornfield is the other guy.
No, maybe Joseph is. Joseph is because he's really, he lives in Massachusetts at the IMS Center. And they, the three of them, brought back Vipassana meditation from the East and got it situated in this country to the advantage of so many thousands, tens of thousands of people, and we all did it when we were in India. That's where we met them, at least two of them, Joseph and Sharon. Jack was in Thailand. And this has had a profound effect on our whole relationship with bhakti yoga. Okay. Absolutely profound. Insight meditation. And it's allowed that other part that is really necessary, discriminating wisdom, I call it, to be blended with the bhakti thing. So that there's less of a way to walk around, fool yourself. I'll just say that. I'll just say that. But Joseph wrote a book called Mindfulness. It's a big, fat, thick book. I urge you to get that book Mindfulness, because it is based on the traditional mind, not the ubiquitous mindfulness in the West or in this country that's a little bit self-helpy. So Joseph wrote the most phenomenal book. In fact, listen to a podcast I did with him on that book. He is phenomenal. Then he did something that, okay, you guys that are doing show notes, I'm going to tell you that you've got to include Joseph from the retreat in Maui with Ram Dass, where Sharon and Jack were there as well. And Joseph, I asked him to do an hour and 15 minute talk on the whole core of mindfulness. He laughed at me and then he did it. And if you listen to that and you pay attention, you can become free. I call it 75 minutes to freedom is what I call it.
Oh, that ain't bad.
Yeah.
I mean, 75 is a lot, but then when you look at what you're getting, it's like, oh, yeah, freedom.
Yeah.
Freedom's worth at least 200.
Yeah, exactly. So so let's put that up there in the show notes for this. But listen, I have to show you all, because I'm going to really ask Ramin about this. I love this piece of art. Look, everybody, those of you who are on YouTube, you can see this. Okay, and what it says is, death is just one character I play. My real name is Change. What is that?
I've got a pack of stickers that say that.
Okay, well, why can't I get some?
I'll send one, or I'll bring you one personally.
Yeah, bring me.
Oh,
that's going to be good. But this has all come to mind because of Sharon's book, Real Change, which really will help in this very, very unnerving time. But You talk a lot about creativity and death. Can you talk a little bit to us about that subject?
About creativity and death. Well, I think creativity is... It is. There I go, trying to make something cool out of it. It's eternal. There's no limit to how much you can create. I don't think infinity is this solid number that can have a cap on it. That's the nature of it. It just goes out forever. And I think death is also this illusion, like little forms die, but the actual thing itself does not ever die. And when you look at stars, and when a star dies, you think it's, oh, it died, and then there's a pulsar there. But really, it might be that the star became the pulsar, so it never really went anywhere. Or when things die off and distribute into multiple particles. Look how half-assed all this science is, I'm saying. But the point of it is that you imagine death to be just darkness and lack of activity, but it might be the same as with space, where who's a John Wheeler that said that empty space is not empty. It's actually the most violent physics there is. Like, empty space is where all the action is. It's like infinite amount of energy in the void. And so when you think of death being void, it's not actually nothingness, it's everythingness. So that's what helps me a lot, because I think the thought of nothingness kind of scares people. Like, you imagine just lights out, dark room, but you're still aware, when that might not be the case. It might be part of the case, but maybe not the whole picture. So let's see. About death and creativity. That kind of touches on it, right?
Yeah, no.
That's, you might great. Have to edit it and put different words in front of other words.
No, I don't think so. But how are you interfacing with people you're talking to in terms of bringing this up? And what kinds of things are you trying to get out of them, or getting them to reflect on when you talk about, particularly about death? I mean, it's not something 36-year-olds are going around doing podcasts about, okay? It's just not.
I think there's more and more of us, though. Like, if you look at, you know, our friend Noah Lampert, Synchronicity Podcast, Michael Phillips with Third Eye Drops, Colin Frangicino's Cosmic Nod, there is this, there has been like this explosion of people influenced by the names I've mentioned before. But I don't know. I think... One thing I will say, though, is I don't think I do, unless it's subconscious, I don't have this agenda where, oh, I must turn on all these people, I must convince them of this. Like, I feel like that's the wrong way to enter a conversation, yeah, or even an approach to anything. I don't have like a corporate mission statement, like, our mission is to enlighten all the people by my school of enlightenment. Like, I already feel like that's going to push away people. I don't even have an about page. Not that I'm so pretentious of like, oh, I don't have a name. You must refer to me as just whatever sound I think of in this time. I think you can call me a number, you can mispronounce my name, anything. And but ultimately, I do find myself pushing back against whenever someone says, well, you know, we've got this one life, and then after that, that's it. It's all random chance, and that's all we got. Like, I found it.
That's a burr under the saddle a little bit, maybe, huh?
Breaks on my brain. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, no, it just doesn't line up right. I know it's you're saying that because you're pushing back against your parents raising you too Christian or too Muslim or too something. But I guess I don't have that pushback. So I recognize that firm atheist stance as being just a place on the road that eventually you might see past and think, oh, it's actually more complicated than that. And perhaps consciousness is more fundamental than particles and matter. It's just, you're a consciousness and everyone else is a consciousness. And behind all that, we're the one consciousness that's split up into all the other ones, because that's the dance we do, because it's boring and lonely to just have it all and be blissed out all the time. And once we get back there, we'll realize we never left there, and you can't leave there. It's all there is. You couldn't put it anywhere if you wanted. Even if you bought all of the public storage units or something, you can't fit it all into that. It's too big. So And I think, I haven't read Sharon Salzberg's book yet, but I imagine that she's coming at it somewhat in the same way, and that the way to actually have change is that we all have to recognize this truth, and not in a dogmatic way, not in a way that you have to memorize this theology, but in a way that you have to treat other people as though they are you, because they are you.
Well, wait a minute. Let's even go back further than that. Everybody realizes it's all impermanent. Everybody. You eventually get that. You lost that girlfriend. Ooh, God, I thought that was a lifetime thing. You have a wife. I really loved that. I just got a new Bose bedside speaker. That's so great. I can play anything and have this wonderful, whoops.
The girlfriend took it.
The girlfriend took it. No, that wasn't your, yeah. Everything is impermanent. So, you know, Don Juan, the books, The Yaki Way?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I love that part where he tells Castaneda, just keep death on your left shoulder.
Mm.
Always. So it's always there. And just in the way, that's why I really am, I'm pretty blown away by you delving into this in a way and publicly, and obviously it wouldn't be public because I know you don't do anything unless it's in you. So
you'd be surprised. I've been in a like booking.com commercial, and I don't do it anymore because of the pandemic, but I'll do commercial acting sometimes. But
what's wrong with that? Where is that outside of death?
Just because you said, I don't do anything unless I believe it. And then I'm like, oh, I don't really believe in doing Halliburton commercials. But if they're like, hey, we'll give you $7,000 to hold a clipboard in this.
And look, you absolutely, I can see you with your Halliburton bag and booking through booking.com, doing it all. I mean, come on. That's not, you know.
And I know that's an outdated reference, but like with
maybe
my
Trump
stuff.
Hotel might not.
Oh, yeah.
Selling condos and something. I don't know. But
yeah.
More to the point is, I think you've seen Becoming Nobody, the Ram Dass movie.
Oh, yes.
That's been out. And how he talks, the whole last, I don't know, 20% of it or something is around death, because that was a big deal, not just when he was leaving in the last few years, but his entire teaching career, shall we say, that was always there. He worked with people who were dying bedside for a long, long time, established organizations, one of them that's still running, Dale Borglum runs the Living Dying Center up in Marin. So the way that he contextualizes how that has to be integrated into our life in the same way that we integrate anything else, our relationships, our work, our roles and identities and so on, our life, the curriculum. This is part of the curriculum, and integrating it is a healthy thing to do. And of course, part of that takes the next thing that we need to talk about. Practice. We have to practice. If we don't practice, we are going to remain the exact same schmageggies that we started out with on the spiritual path.
Yeah.
We just transfer a bunch of shit, move it around a little, and we're living the good life. That's why. Say that again.
Blinked for a second.
Yeah.
Oh, it's telling me my connection is unstable. My life is unstable. My mental health is unstable.
I knew that.
Okay, good.
I was going to talk to you, I had to talk about that stability.
Oh, God. Oh, but when you said if we don't practice, like, you know, it'll be bad. So that's
bad. Not bad. There's no bad. This is no Judaic Christian tradition.
That's true, yeah.
No, there's just, gee whiz, you're the same schmagaggy that you were, and you were going to just roll along with the spiritual aphorisms that don't really mean much.
Yeah, just the bumper sticker spiritualism. I don't know if people use it as bumper stickers, but the
Hallmark. We can call it Hallmark.
So there's what happens if you don't practice, but it's also fun to think about, oh, what if I do practice? And so much of like our favorite musicians, what we don't see is what they, how much time they spent practicing and repeating those motions over and over. And I think of practice as this, not in a derogative way or a pejorative way. How many words do I know that describe that? In a way that, you know, you shouldn't want to do it. When I was a kid, I didn't want to practice violin or guitar. You just want to play, but you know that there is some benefit in practicing. So if you actually do practice, it will, you will see improvements. And it just takes a little bit of seeing the improvement, whether it's exercise or instruments or whatever, to know like, oh, it works. Practicing works. I got to keep showing up. And with this, it would just be sitting down, which is the most boring thing you can do. Sit down and do nothing.
Sit down, do nothing. Oh, but take a peek, open the mind and look inside a little bit and actually get to the point where in terms of it, the wonderful transformations that can take place through just a simple breath meditation that Sharon Joseph and Jack teach, Vipassana, is stuff starts to slow down a little bit, you know, that instant firecracker shit that's going on in the mind. Mm-hmm. So it slows down. And then you notice that outside of the formal meditation. And then when you include a little bit of like, get that Ram Dass app and get the push notification so you can be here now. And it, stuff starts to happen where you're more and more motivated.
Ooh, now that's motivation.
Yeah, here we go. UPS must be here. We are more and more motivated to do it for no reason. You don't think, oh God, I got to meditate or anything like that. It's brushing the teeth.
Yes.
After a while. I mean, I've noticed myself in all the years that ended up as to what's happening. So, and similarly, to bring into the left shoulder there, first of all, anyone can go any moment. Look what we're looking at right now with this pandemic. People are just like, boom, in a day, they're gone. So it's life is not that dependable. So having a relationship with the fact that, gee whiz, we do need to understand that this corporal thing is not who we are.
Not at all. Yeah. And I can't help but, I've perhaps repeated this quote to you before, and you've perhaps heard this quote many, many, many times, but Ram Dass saying, hold on tightly, let go lightly. So let go lightly is how you should approach death, not cling and like try to wish it was the past. So many people are like, oh, I wish it was 2019 again. 2020 sucks. I want it back. How do I will myself back? How do I jump timelines to stop being in 2020? And the hold on tightly part is just because you have to let go doesn't mean like, oh, screw it. It's going to go away anyway. So I'm just going to detach and not be here.
Nihilism, that's called.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's death in every moment, right? You just see it. That's why this insight meditation, this, I keep going back to it because it has been so powerful for me and for many, many of my contemporaries. You see, once you start to realize the moment that becomes and dies, you get a much healthier relationship with who you are. You know, you absolutely do. So,
yeah, every breath is kind of a death. If you really get into it, if it's like as you're exhaling, if you were to stop yourself from inhaling or if the oxygen was sucked out of the room, it puts you in a very real place that, oh, this is each one. It's a whole new cast of characters coming in.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or like how our body replaces itself fully every 7 years or something. So it's not even the same group of atoms that were in you the whole time.
Yeah. And this
a friend of mine has a joke about, I've brought up this joke before, and I don't even remember it that well, but it was something about given how much our atoms are cycling in and out of us, it's possible that you are, it's most likely that you share atoms with Hitler, and then He's like, oh, does that also mean that I share atoms with Albert Einstein? And the guy goes, no, just Hitler. Hitler. Or yeah, some variation of that. He might have switched Albert Einstein and Hitler, but I just like that.
And by the way, this is serious because Ramin has also done a book called After You Die and focuses on what happens when you die. I've been waiting actually for Ramdas to come to me in a dream and tell me not when you die what happened. I think I have a good feeling of going into the bardos, the liminal spaces that the Tibetans, I like their version of it. I like their version of reality all the way and subscribe to it. But it's after you flow through those liminal spaces and those bardos. Ramdas, what happens then? I mean, he did describe, actually, there's a thing, the soul pod, and we do meet up with all of our pod, and we eventually travel from one incarnation to another. That's why it's so familiar when you have people that are really, you're really close to, or you meet somebody, like you. I met you, and I right away, okay, yeah.
Soul family,
soul brother.
So we'll see each other in the next one, too. That'll be cool.
Yeah. I'll have to wait quite some time for you, but I'll wait, Ramin.
But look how fast everything goes now. I mean, it's October already. It's literally going to be 2028 in 3 days.
Yeah.
I was thinking that we need to find a way to like define time differently. Like we need to find a way to define it by events happening rather than, rotations of a cesium atom or whatever they have it defined as, because doesn't time feel like it's speeding up exponentially?
I never think about shit like that, actually. I don't know why, but
it doesn't interest you, or just it's scary?
No, it just doesn't interest. Whatever shall be, kind of.
Oh, interesting. Maybe, yeah. I need to get there.
No, you need to have fun doing what you're doing. I mean, the interesting thing about, especially about your art, I love the thumbnail you did of me for your podcast, by the way.
Oh, awesome.
Can I have that?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll send you the high-res files.
Oh, please. No, I'm not kidding. I think I want to change my thing up on Mind Rolling. Put that.
Oh,
what I have now is awfully boring. But there's a lovely combination in the art of your expression of that thing there, divine presence, whatever, and the humanness that we are, humanity. It's such a, that word's getting very lost, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
These days with everything that's going on and the people that we're seeing in confrontation with each other and the polarization just that happens. Like if you happen to meet up with somebody that's got the opposite view, humanity seems to have flown out that window, and I'm part of it. I am.
In what way are you part of it?
I'm part of it just in the way that I might yell a little epithet at the television or have a thought as somebody's talking to me that sounds to me to be pretty ignorant, you know. So there's a lack of a bunch of things, actually. Humility.
It does feel like we've collectively lost our minds, and I think we have, and I think that's part of the, whatever you want to call it, the ascension process, the awakening process, the whatever, like we talk about Iron Age and Golden Age and Industrial Age, Agricultural Age and Information Age, Misinformation Age, Age of Hypocrisy, like we're kind of moving through these ages very fast. And
how about this age known as the Kali Yuga?
Oh, which is that?
Oh, there's four.
I've heard it, but I don't know what the definition is.
Kali, you know Kali.
Of course.
Right?
I've been told that I might be Kali.
You might
be
Kali.
That's a whole other story.
No, you don't look like
Kali. I have wacky friends, and not wacky in that they're completely crazy, but like they, you know, very, very woo-woo, very in touch with astrology and reincarnation of gods and things. And I was told that I was the reincarnation of Kali, and I'm here to, I forget what my mission is exactly, but
well, you better get that straight. Come on.
But when I was looking at images of Kali and the tongue sticking out and the necklace of skulls and the chopping the head off and stuff, like a lot of it was like, okay, I can kind of see that as I'm looking around my room, like all these skulls, all these sword things, like if it was someone, and I know that I'm, it's the wrong gender for it, but also we've seen gender just completely melt and the boundaries between the binary are no longer existent. So it could be that I'm a male reincarnation of it. But
all
like
right.
I said,
well,
just send
me your picture because I've been worshiping Kali, but I want somebody who's like here now. I mean, that's
so
great.
What's the Kali Yuga?
Kali is the age of destruction.
Ah.
Okay, first there was the age of purity. Everyone loved each other. Everybody worshiped together, knowing what the one and that they were part of the one. There was no separation. Then it started breaking down as we got into subsequent epochs. I mean, these are like periods of like millions of years or some crazy thing. But seems to be somewhat correct that we are in this Kali Yuga.
Yes, 100,000%.
So, but it's also the destruction of ignorance. So it's not a bad thing. It's not a good thing. It is real. But you know what? I don't care about that either. It's another thing that I really am more concerned about our humanity and its connectivity to remembering our divinity and the way that they come together and looking around now how that's really hard to see and experience with people, the lack of it, and then the lack of it in myself when I react to social injustice or whatever it may be. It's we have a course that be in the middle of it. I don't know when this podcast will come out, but called the Yoga of Service with Ram Dass. How to develop compassionate heart, how to really know how to help each other, help someone without having being the helper. All of the great stuff that Ram Dass has talked about. I mean, Ram Dass working with death, Ram Dass working with service. These are great, great offerings that he's made over the years. And that's what I'm interested in, the nitty gritty of how we can change our guts so that we can actually be of some use in this lifetime, you know.
And hey, we're back.
I'm sitting here and you just completely disappeared. The molecules vanished.
Yeah, when you started talking about social justice, I shut it all off.
Yeah. Well,
the feds did it. The feds shut us off with their COINTEL Pro or whatever it's called.
Oh, God.
I can't even keep up anymore. Like with the things, the news, like I can see maybe two of the main things in a day, but most of the time I don't even know what people are talking about.
Good.
There's too much.
Yeah. Good. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, really it is too much. It really is too much. And I was getting very, I was getting kind of dramatic at the end there and lamenting the lack of humanity, lamenting the lack of realization of divinity and the combination of the two and humility. And I was lamenting, and I think I was becoming a little bit maudlin in that lamentation, actually. And that's when you disappeared. You just had enough of that. Shut up.
Yeah.
You can't say that. Hey. Oh,
but the lack of divinity, like we're projecting a lot of it, because I have this feeling that a lot of the people we disagree with vehemently on social media, we would get along with better if they were in front of us and we had some, you know, books and we got to actually have time to present where we're coming from, because we're all acting from a place of feeling threatened, whether it's for ourselves or others, like, and people are kind of defending that and they're getting really pushed to the left or to the right or to whatever dichotomy you want to come up with and not willing to hear the other ones out. And sometimes one side is more irrational than the other, but you can't just block them out, I guess, because then how are you about the divinity and the compassion and the loving all beings if you say, well, 50% of them can screw off and then the rest of us will see.
Exactly. Exactly. Then that's it. That is exactly it. Well, you know what? We're kind of at the end of our thing because I was waiting for you to come. I did a whole meditation, mantric meditation that I thought, gee, the guys could use that somewhere. And but bottom line is.
That's part of the episode.
Yeah. And bottom line is you call support, will you? We started out with this thing. You need to call support for your internet connection because it sucks, Ramin.
I do. It really is trash. Maybe that's good. That stops me from getting into fights online or something.
Yeah, right. Well, I really thank you for being here. I have so much fun.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure. You do really good things, and I'm very glad that I got to know you after hearing you all these years and in my ear pods.
But everybody, connect with Ramin. Go to at Ramin Nazir, R-A-M-I-N-N as in Norman, A-Z-E-R on Instagram, and you can see some of the beautiful stuff that he does. You can tune into the podcast where? Give us a URL.
Yeah, go to either rainbowbrainskull.com or raminazer.com, which I like to say it like you do. Do people ever tease you for that?
Dot
like com. Where you put the emphasis of the dot, like log in to ramdas.org. Instead of most people put it on the org, like ramdas.org, and then you go ramdas.org.
I do so many things.
But don't go to ramdas.org. Go to rainbowbrainskull.com for all of your everything needs.
Yes. Go everywhere. And that's what you're all about.
There.
That's what
Ramin
is all about. Everywhere. Go everywhere and pull in whatever. Actually, you know, that's what Ramdas was about. He said, wherever I can get a teaching, I'm going to take that teaching. And remember in the film, he talks about, I'm getting teachings from somebody, he's my friend. And then when I describe him, you're okay with people of color, you're okay with different religions, you're okay with sizes of people. But if it doesn't have a body, you're not so okay about it.
Yeah. Emmanuel. Who's also the person that said, hey, Ramdas, you're in school. Why not take
the curriculum?
Yeah, same guy. Also, the line, dying is like
taking off.
It's like taking off a tight shoe.
Tight shoe.
Completely safe. That's what I was looking for. Yeah. Oh, it's completely safe. Yeah. It's like taking off a tight shoe. So death, completely safe. Don't try it at home. Don't try it on your family. But when it happens outside of your control,
we should do it. Ramin, let's do a podcast where we just do Ramdas quotes, but in unison, maybe some harmony. I don't know. Put a little music behind
it. Already. Yeah.
Oh, love you, man.
Love
Thank
you too.
For being
Thanks so
here.
Much for having me.
This is Mind Rolling. Go to BeHereNow.net. Yes.
Can I bug you about Sharon or should I just reach out to her separately?
No, just send me a note because I will remember to do that because I talk to her a lot. So,
excellent.
Yeah, send me a note and I'm going to have her do it.
I owe you one.
Okay. You send me some stickers, that's all. Or bring some. Come.
Transaction complete.
This is Mind Rolling on Be Here Now Network. Go to BeHereNowNetwork.com. And just visit with all the great teachers, podcasters, and thought leaders. And we'll see you next week.
Hare Krishna.